Chapter 3. The Connection of Christianity with the Jewish History. Undoubtedly, our Savior assumes the divine origin of the Mosaic institution, and independently of his authority, I conceive it to be very difficult to assign any other cause for the commencement or existence of that institution, especially for the singular circumstance of the Jews adhering to the unity when every other people slid into polytheism, for their being men in religion, children in everything else, behind other nations in the arts of peace and war, superior to the most improved in their sentiments and doctrines relating to the deity. In the doctrine, for example, of the unity, the eternity, the omnipotence, the omniscience, the omnipresence, the wisdom, and the goodness of God. In their opinions concerning providence and the creation, preservation, and government of the world. Campbell on Myrdr, page 27. Oh, which we may add, in the acts of their religion not being accompanied either with cruelties or impurities. In the religion itself being free from a species of superstition which prevailed universally in the popular religions of the ancient world, and which is to be found perhaps in all religions that have their origin in human artifice and credulity, bizarre, fanciful connections between certain appearances and actions and the destiny of nations or individuals. Upon these conceits rested the whole train of auguries and auspices, which formed so much even of the serious part of the religions of Greece and Rome, and of the charms and incantations which were practiced in those countries by the common people. From everything of this sort, the religion of the Jews, and of the Jews alone, was free. Vid. Priestley's Lectures on the Truth of the Jewish and Christian Revelation, 1794. Undoubtedly, also, our Savior recognizes the prophetic character of many of their ancient writers. So far, therefore, we are bound as Christians to go. But to make Christianity answerable, with its life, for the circumstantial truth of each separate passage of the Old Testament, the genuineness of every book, the information, fidelity, and judgment of every writer in it, is to bring, I will not say great, but unnecessary difficulties into the whole system. These books were universally read and received by the Jews of our Savior's time. He and his apostles, in common with all other Jews, referred to them, alluded to them, used them. Yet, except where he expressly ascribes a divine authority to particular predictions, I do not know that we can strictly draw any conclusion from the books being so used and applied, beside the proof, which it unquestionably is, of their notoriety and reception at that time. In this view, our scriptures afford a valuable testimony to those of the Jews. But the nature of this testimony ought to be understood. It is surely very different from what it is sometimes represented to be, a specific ratification of each particular fact and opinion, and not only of each particular fact, but of the motives assigned for every action, together with the judgment of praise or dispraise bestowed upon them. St. James, in his epistle, says, "Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord." Notwithstanding this text, the reality of Job's history, and even the existence of such a person, have been always deemed a fair subject of inquiry and discussion amongst Christian divines. St. James's authority is considered as good evidence of the existence of the book of Job at that time, and of its reception by the Jews, and of nothing more. St. Paul, in his second epistle to Timothy, has this similitude. "Now, as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth." These names are not found in the Old Testament, and it is uncertain whether St. Paul took them from some apocryphal writing then extant, or from tradition. But no one ever imagined that St. Paul is here asserting the authority of the writing if it was a written account which he quoted, or making himself answerable for the authenticity of the tradition. Much less that he so involves himself with either of these questions, as that the credit of his own history and mission should depend upon the fact whether Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses or not. For what reason a more rigorous interpretation should be put upon other references, it is difficult to know. I do not mean that other passages of the Jewish history stand upon no better evidence than the history of Job, or of Jannes and Jambres. I think much otherwise, but I mean that a reference in the New Testament to a passage in the Old does not so fix its authority as to exclude all inquiry into its credibility or into the separate reasons upon which that credibility is founded, and that it is an unwarrantable as well as unsafe rule to lay down concerning the Jewish history what was never laid down concerning any other, that either every particular of it must be true or the whole false. I have thought it necessary to state this point explicitly because a fashion revived by Voltaire and pursued by the disciples of his school seems to have much prevailed of late of attacking Christianity through the sides of Judaism. Some objections of this class are founded in misconstruction, some in exaggeration, but all proceed upon a supposition which has not been made out by argument, viz. That the attestation which the author and first teachers of Christianity gave to the divine mission of Moses and the prophets extends to every point and portion of the Jewish history, and so extends as to make Christianity responsible in its own credibility for the circumstantial truth, I had almost said for the critical exactness, of every narrative contained in the Old Testament.